the notion that we're letting the systems work autonomously on our behalf and we have to vest in the systems that capability, it's profound. It's cool, it's scary, but that's where all this changes.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Sagi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. And today I have the pleasure of hosting Jason. Jason, such a big influence in the procurement space. I'm sure you guys from that space will know him immediately. But Jason, thank you so much for joining me today.
Sagi, it's great to talk with you.
Absolutely. Well, the hint here was that Jason is the founder and current board member of Spend Matters, which is very important piece of the of what I think is the big renaissance of the procurement technology space. But he also co-founded the multiple startups and worked a lot of different interesting things. So maybe we start by just a quick overview of, you know, what you're up to right now, a little bit about your background to kind of set the stage.
Sure, sounds good. So I've been in the procurement technology space for more than half my life now, which is really scary. I got into it when I was out of college and grad school in 1997. I found myself in it by accident. I was working for a consulting firm in Boston, and it was a period like today. You know, you could be a kid, but because there was no true expertise in this post-client server world, a 22 or 23-year-old could have an expert voice. So I started writing about it for a bunch of trade rags, we called them back in the day. Information Week, Internet Week. And I was really interested in procurement systems, specifically negotiation mechanisms. So not just, you know, the purchasing module in SAP, but how online negotiations could yield better results. So explored that, did quite a bit of writing. And I went to work for a company called Free Markets for 5 years. And I described that as my PhD in procurement. Free Markets has an amazing alumni group. There were, I think, at the height, 1,000 of us. But a lot of the most influential people in the sector came out of Free Markets, and just an amazing talent base. From that, I went on to start a company called Spend Matters, which I describe as a data-driven research firm around procurement, really at the bullseye, but also a number of other areas on the periphery of that bullseye, pushing into finance and supply chain. And Spend Matters was really, you know, the story of a couple of pivots. It started out as a blog. I got the idea from a friend of mine who was at Ariba at the time to write an op-ed blog, essentially, in 2004, and realized after 5 years that wouldn't scale past a certain point, so it became a research firm. We started selling our research subscriptions, and then eventually it became a data business, really trying to assign objective data sets to functional capability and customer satisfaction for the procurement sector. And it was a great journey. I'm no longer working in that business day to day, but on the board of it, but have really throughout that time been involved in looking at data businesses in different ways. And so if I were to describe what I'm doing today, I wish I could have a job description or title because I don't really have one, but co-founded a couple different data businesses. So one in the metals pricing space and forecasting space called Metal Miner, one called Public Spend Forum, which is public sector procurement data. I'm on the board of a company I didn't found, but I'm in love with a mission called Mission Measurement, which measures social outcomes for NGO and nonprofit initiatives, such as can you literally put a price on reducing homeless and recidivism? Should it cost $100K? Should it cost $10K? And what nonprofits can do at best? Not so different than selecting the best procurement system, believe it or not, in terms of how you look at data. So in this world of AI and working on some new things there as well, pre-discussion point at this stage, but I think data is becoming so fascinating. I think the value of data for decision support and decision calculus is really where a lot of resources are going to go in the future. So spending a lot more time there these days.
So this is fascinating. Obviously, it's coming from, like, I think I always find the stories where, you know, you call those pivots, but it's really sort of like metamorphism of businesses, you know, where you kind of like, you solve a problem and then you realize, wait, there's actually a bigger need here. And then you go and grow into that. So that's super interesting. But maybe we actually start from the end there, right? So I think we're recording this in the last week of January here. And I don't know, the last couple of weeks or even less. I don't even know. The time flies so fast right now, the news cycle around this. But with the DeepSeek and the, you know, all the different earthquakes that AI is going right now, it's just crazy times. Do you feel it? It's like, it's insanity.
It really is. And I liken it to when I was in university and I saw a graphical browser for the first time. I was not a developer, but I was tech savvy and I was on all the chat rooms, and my dad was a bureaucrat at the university when I was young and brought home a VAX terminal on the weekends, which I played around with. And I think I learned more about those modems in the late 70s and 80s than probably any other kid. So flash forward, it's, you know, 93, 94, 95, and you see Mozilla, and it blew me away. The notion of graphical browsers and hyperlinks, it opened up my eyes to a whole lot of things. I thought I was going to stay as an academic and get a PhD. I ended up dropping out and going into consulting so I could live that world. It was fascinating. But I think what's happening now, and it's cliche to say, what a time to be alive, but it's amazing. I think the impact of what is starting right now is going to be so much bigger than the client server error, so much bigger than the graphical browser and SaaS. I mean, the notion of autonomous systems doing our bidding, we hope, rather than us doing their bidding, is really revolutionary. And I'm an optimist. That's probably my greatest weakness as well. I like to point that out when I'm talking to people about business ideas. I'm an optimist, shoot me down. But, you know, I think we're going to see such productivity gains that even though the West is going through a lot of challenges right now in terms of debt to GDP ratios, I'm a avid reader and listener. This great episode on the All In this week, interviewing Ray Dalio, for example, on his thesis on the debt challenge and how to overcome it. I think building some of this stuff right now with my hands up close, I think we've got a chance through productivity gains, and hopefully we can address employment and unemployment with it as well, to get out of our debt spiral in the West. And it's an apolitical situation as well. We can all agree there's a continuum of what we want in terms of government social programs, regardless of where we live. Some countries are more socialist, some are more capitalist. But the productivity gains are going to be huge. And I think if we break apart into atomic levels, you know, the job of someone in procurement today, somebody working on a category strategy side or a procure to pay side, or somebody in legal working on contracts, or somebody in supply chain working on transportation or warehouse management. It's my belief that in the not too distant future, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, if you want to be a pessimist, 90% of that work is something that an agent will do for us. And it's not just AI is a huge enabler, but you know, there's lots of other capabilities which are starting to emerge that it, as we move from a UI-focused world to a world where things happen beyond a UI, I think it's revolutionary. You know, the DeepSeek stuff is really interesting. I'm not a data scientist myself. There's multiple takes on it. I am, you know, always skeptical of things coming out of China. I've been to China. When I was doing global sourcing work a long, long time ago, I have experience on the ground. And I think on one side, we can say, honestly, it's kind of a TikTok moment. DeepSeek as an app can collect a lot of information. You know, I hope corporations are not accessing it or downloading it. But DeepSeek as a model, which you can run natively, is very different. And it speaks to how innovation through open source is going much, much faster. As well, I feel bad for Nancy Pelosi. I actually don't feel bad for her, but she bought a lot of call options on NVIDIA a few weeks ago, and those probably are pretty deeply out of the money at this point. But it's justice, amazing time.
Justice needs to find its way somehow. But yeah, back to your point, though, you said a lot of things I agree here with, and a lot of interesting ones. I think the DeepSeek, to add the third kind of like thing there is, aside from the China versus US tapa storyline, we can put this that aside. There's the open versus close. That's an interesting one. But I found the most interesting one is we've been on that path for the last year, where it was different the first year. Like if we'll start counting the LLM's revolution in the last 2 years, right? the first year was just a hub, but also like you kind of like don't even know how to digest what you're actually experiencing. It's very cool. It's not very good at some things. It's getting better though quickly. It was confusing. A lot of money started pouring into it and so on. The last year, you start to see that, wait a second, those other labs are able to catch up relatively quickly. You have open source and closed source that are now all creating good models. Maybe they're one model behind, still one model behind GPT or specifically, or any model coming from OpenAI, but still just one model behind, right? And keep like catching up. And then I think the R1 from DeepSeek, the third reason it created a lot of noise. And for listeners that maybe don't know what we're talking about, was essentially this lab that appeared to be small in China. I also have my own belief whether it really was funded or not funded, whether they used existing models to train or not. It doesn't matter. What matters is that they were able to create a model that is as good as the best model that is currently in the market for OpenAI. And it seems to be a lot cheaper to run with some new improvements that they did do and confirm that there are real improvements that they did to the way they trained the model and run it. So this is, again, not to get too technical for folks that are listening in, but the importance here to me is I think it registers the idea that the models are going to be something expensive or something like a rare material to a more of like a commodity that is literally going to be everywhere. So if anything, everything you said just a second ago about the 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, it just further, just what happened last week, further make it clear that that space war, you know, like we had for the Cold War that got the US to the moon, is essentially what's going to happen here. I am registering to that idea that the DeepSeek can be the Sputnik moment of this Cold War, because we're going to see a lot more faster, cheaper models coming in from the US now, trying to prove that the US is still ahead of the game. Everyone is going to benefit from it. Everyone. And then the second thing is how important is the agents in the use case and the application layer become. Not application from a UI perspective, to your point, but from a utility perspective. Like, what do you do with those models? What do you do with the browser? The browser came out, and then the websites are the one that made it worth going to the browser. But if the browser and the internet is very expensive and very hard to run, then it is a cool technology, but not mainstream. What we're seeing here is that so fast, it moves from, oh my God, this is super cool, to, oh my God, this is dirt cheap. Like, this is like cheaper than, like, it becomes like so cheap that you integrate it anywhere and everywhere.
And I think there's some other elements to it too, in terms of the leveling of the playing field. I mean, there's so many angles we could go off on. Just the voice ecosystem, for example, in the AI world, the number of startups targeting voice. I was playing around with a video today that I had some colleagues create. Fascinating. But my background at free markets and my passion in one area in procurement, I've looked at a lot of areas over the years, but it's been negotiation and sourcing. It's where I started. I'm still fascinated by game theory. And we went from a world, I started out in kind of the world of complex auctions, right? So you could have, at free markets, we talked about net present value auctions. So you could actually account for the cost of a contract in a bid over 3 to 5 years, switching costs, tooling costs, other aspects on an NPV basis. You could have multi-currency bidding. Very quickly, that evolved into a world where combinatorial optimization started coming into play. And free markets was relegated, to use kind of a UK soccer term, to a second tier spot behind players like CombineNet and later Trade Extensions and Kilvar and others who brought sourcing optimization, the ability to collect a lot of data, apply constraints against that data, and run scenarios. But you still needed a really smart user to figure it out. Somebody untrained with an IQ of 90 is going to take a long time to figure that out. I like to be the idiot in the room around some of these questions myself sometimes. If I can figure it out without training, I think other people can as well. But now what's amazing is even if you're using an off-the-shelf model, you can have it run a Monte Carlo simulation for you. Or as an agent, maybe it decides to run that on its own to figure out how a set of suppliers might respond. So you don't even need to understand the math anymore as long as you can check the work. And it can propose things to do for you. So when we say democratizing, it takes the notion of, okay, well, when CombineNet came out, there were maybe 50 people in procurement in the world who could really take advantage of it for transportation sourcing. Trade extensions made that more accessible to MBAs and others. Now, you don't even need that background. It can propose it for you. Now, is it as powerful as some of the off-the-shelf models and solvers? No, but it will get there and it will propose the work for you. And that's revolutionary. So I think we're going to really see an upskilling, not through talent, but through our systems. And where it really begins to blow your mind as well is when suppliers are going to apply the same systems. So I remember in the late 90s, I was at a conference in the Bay Area called Net Market Makers. And it was the early B2B marketplaces. And there was this guy named Moses Ma. It was so ahead of his time. The startup didn't work, but the startup was called Business Bots. And the idea was that these bots would negotiate against each other on your behalf. We are fast approaching that. And so the notion of an agent negotiating against an agent, whether that is for sourcing, whether that's for contracting, whether that is for managing an exception on the supply chain collaboration side, when there's an issue with an order, quality, volume, defect, port delay, the notion that we're letting the systems work autonomously on our behalf and we have to vest in the systems that capability, it's profound. It's cool, it's scary, but that's where all this changes. And wrap around what you said with the level of innovation happening week to week. And yeah, there's a lot of noise. If you ask DeepSeek, the app, what happened in Tiananmen Square, it talks about a peaceful government gathering. If you ask it about the Uyghurs and forced labor, you're not going to get an answer which Govides or others would track around, yeah, there is forced labor in China. But if we can separate out kind of the political noise from the actual capability in terms of the efficiency gains and the reduced compute requirement, it's just a huge enabler. And as you said, it doesn't take these huge teams anymore. You can do it really nimbly, whether you're developing a model, which wasn't the case 6 months ago. Anthropic cost billions of dollars to train, right? I don't believe the $5 million number on DeepSeek. I think they went to school behind the scenes. And I think if you were to ask David Sachs and others digging into it for the US government, there's something behind that. But still, they've got fundamental gains on an open source basis.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think to your point also with going back to the agents and the examples of some of the procurement supply chain places, I think what's interesting also to separate is the fact that something feels a little bit like a power tool right now because it has a little bit different paradigm. A doesn't mean that it will stay that way, both because providers of those tools will become smarter and better and learn and improve, but also because consumer of that concept will get more adjusted to it. I do think about Google a lot. We talked about the browser, but I think what happened with Google, to me, in retrospect, is incredibly interesting because you already had the web. And fast forward to today, and again, that might change now with AI, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt for a second. But going fast forward for today, Google is the first place you go for many things, if not everything. Most people don't even type, they never type an address. You don't do something.com. You would just search for it and then click on the first link because it's probably going to be the right one. When you maybe want to book a table for a restaurant, you're probably going to search for it versus going to the Open Table app. Not everyone. Some people would go there, some people. But from a default perspective, it kind of became like a place where you go. And what I found interesting is that when it started, and I know you were in the space attuned to this, when Google came out, you would never find anything in the first page. You would have to go to the next few pages. No one is going to the next few pages anymore. Why is it? Well, half of it is because Google got better, but the other half, we got used to the fact that if you don't find something with the first query, you'll ask again. You'll just change it a little bit. You'll change it a little bit until you get to a point that the first two links, one of them is the one you're actually looking for. That is super interesting to me because that's like a talk in enterprise a lot about change management. But this is like a global, you know, change. Look at my parents. One of them is very good at searching Google. The other one is horrible. You know what I mean? And you don't think about searching in Google as a skill. But with ChatGPT, it's very clear, even today, that it can do magic, but it can also be completely nonsense. And it's very, very, very rare, unless you're playing with it. If you're trying to do something real with it, it's very rare to have a one-shot success, right? You need to keep the conversation, keep improving it, right? To me, like, what's interesting is that people might hear the fact that now you don't have to be an MBA or a super expert to do something as a negative thing sometimes. And I think about it as like, it doesn't mean that this become a tool that no one need to use. You still need to instruct it, just like if you would hire someone, right? The better example of this is you right now has your own job. Let's assume the person I'm talking about is not the CEO of a company, right? You have your own role, your own job. Maybe you have a team, right? Maybe you're a manager. But even if you're not, everyone would want to hire help for things that they're either not don't like to do or not as qualified to do or not as excited of doing. The idea that you can hire agents to do this work for you, that's exciting. But what people miss is, I am a CEO. I can hire people. I can hire a very smart people. I can hire 10 people with a 180 IQ. Even if I do that, I still need to tell them what to do. I still need to give them some work and an assignment. And I still need to have a process and policies in place. And I still need to do that. So that is the same thing, just on steroids, that every person in the company would be able to have 10 180 IQ entities that can help do the work, but still need to give them the goal and the assignment of what it is that you're trying to achieve. So I think this is just a taste into paradigm shifts of what do we even consider as work. Doesn't necessarily mean that we're not gonna work. It just means that we will just reestablish a new paradigm and a new sort of like baseline of what it is that is part of what you do. Anyway, I just find it fascinating. And I think that sometimes you mentioned the all-in pod a couple of times, like sometimes I feel like people stay too high level with those things of how societally it will change it. And sometimes the questions that people have in their head is a much more smaller scope questions, right? Or like, where do they even go to use it? You know what I mean? And Google solved that for the internet. So I'm really, 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 really excited of what this would do, like this latest stuff and agents. And, you know, I'm obviously in the orchestration space. Like, how can we help kind of bring those capabilities and those technologies to a place where this is not a demo, but it's a something that you can employ, like literally employ as a capability.
Absolutely. And there's so many sides to it outside of work as well. So I'll give you an example from this week. So I'm shuttling back and forth between my kids and school. I have a dear old friend who unfortunately is going through a mental health crisis, but she's got a great support network, including in the support network, people trained in a clinical environment. I have no training, but I know a lot about prompting. So yesterday, rather than listen to the radio, listen to a CD, listen to Spotify, I literally was conversing with ChatGPT voice interface for an hour and a half in my car, back and forth between kids' activities, asking about drug interactions and supplement interactions and diet. And even asking to the point of, am I asking the prompt correctly of ChatGPT to understand like interactions and therapy? And so I come away from that hour and a half so much better prepared just by asking all of these different questions, which in a Google environment, could I get to it? Maybe. I'd probably need to know where to go, but I'd have to read so much. But the conversational aspect of tutor me on this, it's almost like, you know, if you have kids in the US, you might have heard of Montessori school. And in Montessori school, the kids don't just study by the book, but, you know, they study what they're interested in. And so, yes, you have to learn reading and math. But the theory is if they're interested in a subject, they're going to explore it on their own. So that hour and a half I spent, which would have been mindless in the car or indulgent listening to a podcast, instead ended up being a tutorial session on something I'm not academically trained in, but a crisis I'm living through to help someone. And, you know, the support team for our friend put it into place in the past 24 hours already. And we've talked to doctors about it. And it's just, again, it levels the playing field for those willing to ask questions and being, and not only be inquisitive, but be open-minded about different ways of doing things.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
This is an amazing story and example. I've also found the voice interface one to be, once you, it's always, it's if you're trying to show it to someone, it's like always stupid examples. But when you find like an actual example of something, it is so different than what we used to. And I think you kind of said something that made me think about, you know, what would this next era look like? Because obviously, again, in the Google era, Google was the king because it was the information era, right? That's how we call it after the internet. It's the information era. And in an era of information, of unlimited information, obviously the king would be what allows you to find information, research information, search information, right? The exercise was, how do I find the needle in a haystack kind of thing. That is not what this is about. Even if the interface sometimes feel like interface, not from a UI perspective, just from like what we used to, first thing they go to AI with the LLMs is they're trying to do what they did with Google. They're trying to do it with AI. Like, hey, I'm looking for this thing, you know, help me. While I think where we'll roll into is more of that. Again, this is where I don't know where it will go, but it can go both to the, I want to learn this, or I like collaborate with me on this thing, walk with me this thing, and or do this for me, right? This is where the agent comes into. But it's such a mind, like I don't think, again, I don't feel like enough people are talking about that nuance into point of view of human machine interactions. For 20, almost 30 years, but definitely 20 years, we are so used to, we are searching information or we are going to an app to execute a task. You know what I mean? And the idea of collaborating with machines is just not something we're used to, but that's really what this is all about. Because even the agents are going to be collaborative. You're not going to want it to go do anything it wants. You will want it to do as much as possible autonomously, but then come verify that you did the right work, just like you would do with anyone that you would hire. You want them to have, you want to delegate, be able to delegate things to them. You want them to be have the agency to go in and do things, but they're still reporting, quote unquote, to you. You still expect them to give you visibility, to come to you, raise flags when things needs to be flagged, so on and so forth. That is exactly how you would want the agent to work. So it is a collaborative environment. And I think that technology would be way ahead of the society ability to leverage it. And that has its own other rabbit hole we can go to.
It's true. It's true. But to channel something you said 10 or 15 minutes ago, whether it's the Sputnik moment with China and the AI race or AI war or something even greater than that, I think the wake-up call for, you know, the battle of values in different countries is one that's really important to look at. And also one defined by demography as well. China is not sitting still. And I'm shocked by how many people in America who love their Tesla don't even know China's production of EVs right now. I think it's like 8 to 10 times Tesla's output. So China, you know, ostensibly challenged by demography, is killing us in manufacturing. And yes, maybe they've appropriated some of our technology, maybe even our training models. But at the same time, they realize the world is not sitting still for the fact that they're in a demography crisis. So it's, I guess, going to be a period of punctuated equilibrium, whether it's at work, whether it's in geopolitics and trade and the like. One thing I will say, you know, I've got three kids. Oldest is in his young 20s. The youngest is 14. One likely going off to college next year. And I'm convinced that practical education, job training, apprenticeships, even trade school type university programs are going to be so much more important in terms of the people in our startups and operations we want to hire in this world. I heard a fascinating thing at a cocktail party a few weeks ago. A very senior person in HR at a big five firm. The firm is literally winding down its undergraduate recruiting for consulting. And the notion of somebody who doesn't have experience at 21 or 22 being valuable anymore is going away. So how do we give those experiences to people so they know how to prompt, so they know how to not only ideate and go back and forth, but how they become useful members of society? It's, again, it's a crazy time to be alive, but I feel so fortunate that kind of in the second half of my career now, I get a chance to live through this.
Oh, absolutely. What is your, maybe as we kind of like wrap it up, you're optimistic. What do you predict for next year?
I think we will begin to see productivity gains from AI, from RAG, from everything associated with what we're seeing with the evolution of large language models and agent-based work, as well as robotics, begin to impact the economy in terms of productivity. So I think we'll see some measured productivity gains before they really take off in the years to follow. I think there's going to be, for a period of time under the Trump presidency, a lot of trade uncertainty. While a lot of people don't realize whether they're pro-tariff or anti-tariff, that tariffs can be retroactive. So if I've imported 50 containers of a commodity or an ingredient, I may be on the hook for that. So until we have greater clarity as to how that's going to play out, supply chain is going to be very much in kind of a fire and triage mode. But I do think the gains are going to start to work their way through. I think the spoiler, which I'm looking for, whether it takes effect or not, is whether companies begin to roll their own again. So it's, you know, back in the day when organizations thought they could build their own ERP system, probably not the best idea, as history has shown. But are they going to be better off building their own AI capabilities with the hyperscalers and graph databases and all the capability off the shelf, or working with technology providers, or both? I think that could be a sea change for operations and SaaS. And it's one I don't know in terms of how it's going to turn out. But being an optimist, I do think we're going to see some great gains and there's going to be some pain along the way, but we'll get over it. And I think if you're interested in things like longevity science, cures for cancer, true moonshots, which were moonshots in the past, the next 10 years will be a great time to be a human, you know, provided the AI doesn't kill us.
Hey. It's not exciting and it's not, it doesn't matter if it doesn't have that risk. I know, I agree. I appreciate the thought. Something we didn't get to talk a lot about your kind of like experience. We really went into the broader macro, which I love, but I always like to finish with, on a personal note, from your experience, from your career, something that advice you got early on that you feel like paying forward, maybe something you're paying forward for your kids or something, you know, worth kind of sharing.
Sure. A couple of things. I would say the first is the importance of being the contrarian in the room, not to just argue with people for the sake of argument, but to be the one who sparks dissent. Even if you don't believe in the dissent yourself entirely, I think really good things come from human conflict, provided it doesn't devolve too far, as I think in certain cases it may have in the past 5 years. But being the contrarian in the room, being able to take contentious viewpoints. No lions were created by curling up in a corner. And especially as kids go, but also in general, teaching people to not be afraid in terms of taking the contrarian viewpoint to spark debate, I think is really valuable academically, but also at work. The other is there's no better time to put yourself out there. When I was young, I really didn't know very much, but I realized that people in there next to me in that client server, early SaaS era, didn't know much either. And they might've had 10 years on me, 20 years at the time, but I put myself out there. Was I right all the time? No. But this is a time where we're going to see kids do amazing things. So, you know, for those under 25 listening to this, put yourself out there. Don't be afraid to be wrong, because you're probably going to be more right than the two of us half the time now.
It's very true. Very true. Jason, thank you so much. If someone want to nerd with you, where do they find you? Is that X, LinkedIn, both? Where do you?
Yeah, LinkedIn mostly, but I'm on X too. So either one.
Awesome. Very good. Thank you so much again. That was a pleasure.
Sagi, great to connect. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.